This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is indeed the show trainers listen to, and when you go back and look at the roster of guests we've brought your way over the past couple of years on this program, you will know why. It is a who's who of trainers in the thoroughbred industry, and the beat goes on later this evening as we get started with another edition for you here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, together again in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and really excited about this program. We want to welcome everybody joining us throughout North America, Sirius 219, XM 206, all of you tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And JT, it promises to be yet another good one here tonight.
Yeah, no question about it. Love to have the young guys on and hear what they have to say, what their life's like.
You think about some of the sons of trainers that we have in the sport today that work closely alongside their dad at this very moment. You think of names like Norm Cassie working alongside his dad, Mark, and you think of Alan Sherman working alongside his dad, Art, and winning the Kentucky Derby with California Chrome. Steve Asmussen, Todd Pletcher, they each have their kids around the barn helping out. That's one of the unique elements of this sport of thoroughbred racing is that you can have your children there and you can mentor your children if they so choose to get into this profession and follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to have the kids at the barn. And I remember when my son was little, he used to go out to the barn with me in the morning, and he loved putting poultice on horses' legs, and he would be covered in white from head to toe. And his mother would have a fit. But, he loved that. And my grooms loved the fact that he was interested, and they taught him a lot. Now, he didn't become a trainer. He's actually a cameraman. But he does work for TVG and HRTV. So he's still in the game, and he loves it. But it's fun to have the kids at the barn.
Well, we are going to visit with the son of a current trainer in the sport of thoroughbred racing for you tonight on Trainer Talk. And you may have heard of his dad, a fellow by the name of Bill Mott. The Hall of Famer has trained more than 4,600 winners in his Hall of Fame career, countless champions, and his son Riley Mott is nice enough to join us on the program here tonight. Riley, welcome to Trainer Talk, my friend.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. I guess we should just go ahead and start with the obvious question. What's it like growing up as the son of a Hall of Fame horse trainer?
It's great. First of all, we're very lucky to work around some very nice horses for some top-class owners and connections. And ever since I was a young kid, just being in the barn before I was really into the racing part of it, it was just fun attending all the big racing events and whatnot, and summering in Saratoga, where it's obviously the pinnacle of American racing, really. It's been great, and since I've gotten older, I've grown to enjoy it even more so.
You mentioned hanging out at the barn as a kid. Obviously, you're still a kid. You're only 24 years old. Let me tell you that right away. You're still just a kid in this sport, and certainly in life. When you think back to those earliest memories of being around your dad's barn and just hanging out as a little kid, what's the earliest memory that you can think back on?
Well, here in Saratoga, we used to train over at Green Tree, which Darley since purchased, and Kieran McLaughlin's over there now. But my dad was there with his horses for many years. And since I could really even remember, I was there just kind of running around. I learned how to ride a bike over there and just kind of kicking around the barn. So just being over in that area brings back a lot of memories for me.
Did you spend all year in Saratoga? Did you go to school up there, or did you go back to New York, or how did that work?
Well, I was on the pretty typical racehorse trainer circuit. You know, during the fall, we would be down at Belmont, and I would go to school down there, and then in the wintertime, go down to Florida. We were at Payson Park, and springtime, come back up to Belmont for the spring meet, and then we would drive north to Saratoga for the summer. So I was literally traveling with the horses growing up. So, yeah, it was a different lifestyle, but, I mean, at the time, that's all I really knew, so it was pretty normal for me anyway.
When you went to Florida in the wintertime and went to Payson, would you then attend school in Florida at that point? Is that how it worked?
Yes. Well, when I was a kid, you know, preschool and elementary school, that's when I would change schools from New York to Florida and vice versa. And once I got into middle school, I was really big into hockey. I played all year round. And when I got to middle school, I started actually staying in Saratoga all year long. To play for this team in Albany. And then for high school, I went to boarding school in Connecticut because, you know, it gets pretty difficult, you know, changing back and forth with the season, you know, especially when you get older and high school and school starts to get a little more serious. So I only switched back and forth for, you know, part of my school career. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it, honestly, and I think it taught me to have some pretty valuable social skills. I, you know, I kind of make friends wherever I went, and I really enjoyed that part of it, honestly.
Plus, you can't beat the weather, huh? You were always following the sun.
Yeah, with nothing to complain about there. You know, we'd be on the beach in February and think about all those people up north who are suffering. So I didn't mind it.
What would your friends think when you would tell them, "Hey, my dad's a, you know, he's not a mailman. He's not a, you know, UPS guy. He's a horse trainer." What would they think?
Well, I mean, it was kind of a different occupation. I mean, not your run-of-the-mill lifestyle, obviously. And, yeah, I was always just that kid who would, you know, be in one school for just part of the year. But, you know, I mean, high school and elementary school and all that, I didn't really have many friends who were into horse racing at all, honestly, except for just, you know, the other racetrack kids I kind of moved around with when I was younger. But I actually went to the University of Kentucky in Lexington, and obviously that's a pretty good horse country there. So once I moved there, a lot of people were pretty familiar with the sport, and I really enjoyed that setting just because I could, you know, go out to Keeneland with all my buddies and just sort of talk horses with random people. So,
were they always looking for the inside information because you're a trainer's son?
Yeah. I mean, it got a little redundant at times going to Keeneland. Everyone's kind of asking me who to bet on and stuff. But just the knowledge of the game and kind of give it more exposure and everything. So whenever I had friends who weren't so familiar with it ask about it, I was always more than happy to kind of talk to them about it.
Would you ever give them a good winner?
From time to time, I get more losers than winners, I think. So, yeah, if they asked to bet on one of our horses running that day, I said, well, you better not. So, you know, it worked out both ways, I guess.
Well, it's good to hear that you're such a great ambassador for the sport. That sounds, my son had the similar issues that you did, taking his buddies out to the track. He created a legion of horse players, and I imagine you did too.
Yeah, well, I was never really big into the betting side of it. I mean, I think it's fun just to mess around from time to time, but you know, I'm more into just kind of watching the races, and you know, I love following, you know, different, not only our own horses, but other horses around the country. I think, you know, especially right now in this year in particular, there's so many great horses out there to follow and for fans to latch on to, you know, obviously Tepin and Songbird and so on. So it's been fun just to not only work with the horses, but to be a fan as well.
Do you have a favorite horse, Riley?
I mean, I think right now, if I had to pick one, Karina Mia is pretty close to my heart. You know, we worked pretty closely with her all through her two-year-old year. And she obviously ran some pretty nice races and has grown to be a nice race mare. So she's, you know, as classy as they come, and it's fun to be around that kind.
What What'd your dad think of you getting into the horse business?
Well, I mean, my parents warned me. It's obviously a difficult lifestyle. It's, you know, obviously 7 days a week and difficult hours and everything. So, I mean, they never pushed me towards it, but at the same time, they didn't discourage me from getting into it. So I think that was a pretty big part of why I love it so much today, is because I never felt forced to do anything whatsoever. If I, you know, wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, they would have been happy either way. So, yeah, it was pretty cool how it all just kind of played out, and I just took a loving to it, and now I'm where I am now, and I'm enjoying it very much.
When I was younger, Riley, I spent a considerable amount of time working around my father and with my father. What's it like working with your dad every day?
It's great. I really, really enjoy it. You know, before I got into the horses, I mean, he was just my dad, and, you know, we were, you know, father, son. But now, I mean, since I've gotten to the horses, I think it's really brought us very close together. I mean, we obviously share the same passion, and we can talk about the horses or anything really at any given point, and that's been really great. I mean, so I think we're almost like best friends now, than more so than father and son, but it's great. He's and I mean, he's absolutely my idol. I mean, I really look up to him in a great, great way. And I mean, I hope I can be as good of a person as he is, almost as much as I want to be as good of a trainer that he is.
Well, that's about the nicest thing you could say about your father. What is it about him that makes him so great?
Well, I mean, training wise, he's done it since, you know, he could, you know, since he was in high school, honestly. I think he won his first race when he was like 14 or 15. So, I mean, first off, he's been doing it basically his entire life. He's seen so many different things. And I think, you know, the main way to learn in this game is just experience things. I mean, someone could tell you one way or the other, but until you experience it, you don't really know for sure. And I mean, learn from your mistakes and all that. That's the way I kind of see it. But, and I think, you know, he's just a fair and honest guy. I mean, I think he's always sort of been like that, and hardworking, diligent, just kind of wake up every morning and get done what you need to get done. You know, treats everyone who works with him and his peers, you know, pretty fairly. And I think, you know, people notice that, and you know, I don't hear too many people say bad things about him. I think that really says a lot about the kind of person that he is.
He never seems to get discouraged. Is that true?
I mean, obviously, it's a game of ups and downs, as you know. And I mean, you can do as well as you possibly can, and then you can hit a slump. And I mean, it gets pretty discouraging, but I mean, he's always told me, when you go through those, you know, dips, just sort of keep doing what you've been doing. You know, it works, and it'll all kind of turn around. It goes in cycles, really, for everybody.
I would imagine that sometimes, Riley, that's easier said than done. If you hit a dip, things aren't really going your way, you're not winning a lot of races, I would assume it's easy to fall into the trap of questioning your methods and what you're doing, and it's easy to want to make a change. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you always have to critique things in a certain way, but I mean, your core beliefs and values or whatever of training, I mean, if you really believe that's how you should be doing things, I don't think you can really stray too far away from that just because you haven't won a race in a little while. I mean, I think you have to just stay consistent with what you do, and I'm sure there's been times where he's been pretty discouraged, but I think, you know, he kind of covers it up a little bit just so he, you know, keep the spirits of everyone else, you know, high. So you know, you have to kind of just understand that and just keep doing what you're doing.
Talking with Riley Mott, the son of Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Riley, what's the biggest similarity that you see between you and your father?
I just try to be as diligent and, you know, focus on attention to detail. I think that's another reason why he's been pretty successful with his career. I mean, just really, it's about the little things, like taking care of, you know, certain things with certain horses and being consistent. And I just try to sort of emulate that and just work hard. And that's really the main thing, because if you work hard, I mean, hopefully success follows that no matter what.
Let me flip that question around on you. What's the biggest difference between you and your dad?
I'm not really sure, honestly. He's not the most technology savvy person, and me being a millennial, I guess I have that on him. So I guess you had to say one difference. You know, he doesn't do anything much other than look at DRF and Blood Horse on his iPad. I think, you know, everything in our barn is pencil and paper, and you know, he said that's worked for him for 4 decades, so no sense in changing now.
Back to basics. So we won't be seeing Bill Mott on Twitter anytime soon?
I don't think so. No, I don't know if he was thinking about getting an account or anything like that, but I think he's pretty content staying away.
I think, you know, and your dad's been on this program. Shug McGahee has been on this program. And I think when you think about people like your dad, like Shug, Dwayne Lucas, people like that fall into the category of being old school, so to speak. And we hear that term a lot in the sport. Whereas when you look at your role, Riley, and your future, you kind of represent the next generation of trainers in the sport of thoroughbred racing. What does that next generation of training look like?
It's hard to say. I mean, like you said, you have the old school guys, and then you have the new wave of young blood coming in. And I mean, technology has obviously played a big part in, you know, today's racing. There's all sorts of social media avenues and everything like that, which brings more transparency to the sport, which I think is good. And I mean, there's also some negatives, obviously. People have been training horses the same way for 150 years, and it's worked for them, and I'm sure it'll keep on working for the new generation. So, I don't think there's a whole big difference in the training styles, to be honest.
There is some difference in technology. For instance, the other day, Laura Wohlers was talking about Run Happy and said, well, we're going to go back to the barn and check and see what his heart rate was on our monitor and all of that. And I know other trainers are using that type of equipment. Is that something that you have an interest in, or will you stick to the old school methods?
I definitely think it's an interesting tool to have. I don't think you can live and die by it. I mean, I think it's interesting to see where a horse's heart rate peaks in a work or a race and things of that nature. But am I going to look at a horse and say, oh, I don't know if he's, you know, is he ready for this race this weekend? Let me go look at his heart rate. Like, I mean, I don't think, like I said, I wouldn't live and die by it, but I do think it's an interesting tool, and I don't think there's many negatives to knowing that sort of information.
Do you ever go to your dad and say, hey, Dad, what are you doing it this way for? This is the hard way. This is the long way of doing things. We can do it this way. It'd be easier. Why don't we use this technology? Do you ever do that?
I have, like, mentioned maybe we can, do, like, an online training chart or this, that, or the other. And not pushing it too hard, just saying, hey, why don't you take a look at this? But I mean, really, he has his way, and it's worked for him. And like I said before, he said he's used it for about 4 decades, and it's worked for him. So he doesn't want to change too much in that regard, I don't think.
Yeah, Mike doesn't like to change either. I've made some suggestions. Our producers made suggestions to do it easier. Mike's very set in his ways, so I can feel your pain. I think for a big stable like yours, though, it'd be great to have a training chart that was like almost like live, like simultaneous. So if you made a change on yours or your dad made a change, you could actually see that. I would think that would be very helpful.
Yeah, it could be neat, but you know, there's obviously more than one way to skin a cat, and everyone has their own routines and practices, and if it works for them, it's fine. And you know, we're so lucky to have such a good team of you know, assistants and foremen and grooms and so on. I mean, the communication level is great, and we're all on the same page, and I mean, everything runs very smoothly, just because you know, we're all just very familiar with ourselves, and you know, everyone's pretty good in their own regard.
I know you probably have a boatload of memories that you've developed over the years being around your dad, working with the operation. What's your favorite story that you like to tell about Hall of Famer Bill Mott?
Well, I guess the first thing that probably comes to mind is the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, I think it was 2011. We wound up winning the Ladies' Classic, I guess the Distaff and the Classic with Royal Delta and Drosselmeyer. But the Friday night when Royal Delta won, I was holding a program, like, rolled up in my hand. And when she was coming down the stretch and, you know, went to the lead and won the race, I couldn't contain any emotion in my body, and I was jumping up and down with the program, and I sliced my dad's face with my program, and he was bleeding, and I knew he had to, like, go down and do interviews and what have you after the race. So I'm not even sure if he knew he had to cut right away, but we were walking down, and I saw the blood trickling down. I said, oh boy, I better tell him. So I tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, Dad, you better, like, take care of that. So he asked me for a napkin. I, like, searched my pockets, couldn't find anything, of course. So I kind of, like, looked over at him to see if he was looking at me, and he was not. So I kind of, like, bent down and picked up a cocktail napkin from the ground and handed it to him. And I don't think he knew that I did that. So he was kind of dabbing his face with a dirty cocktail napkin from the ground. I'm not sure if he hit it very well from the cameras or anything like that, but we always joke about that, and got a little overexcited, but I think when you win a Breeders' Cup, you kind of get a pass.
Did you ever tell him about the cocktail napkin, or is he finding out right now as he's listening to this program?
No, I definitely told him after the fact, but not in the moment.
Yeah, when his face flew up.
Yeah, started turning green.
It was thankfully pretty superficial, so not many lasting effects.
That was an amazing race that Royal Delta ran. It's funny because I have at the top of my notes here Royal Delta Drosselmeyer, and it's funny because she worked as good as I've ever seen a horse work in my life for that race. I was so sure she was going to win after I watched her work. It was one of the most beautiful things to watch that I've ever seen in horse racing. How did you feel about it?
Oh, I mean, she was a once-in-a-lifetime mare. I mean, ever since she, you know, broke her maiden, first time out of Belmont, bought the pole, we obviously knew at that point she was for real. Like you just mentioned, her work before the Breeders' Cup was pretty sparkling. And, I mean, just having her through those, you know, three or so seasons was very special for our crew and the family and everybody. They did such a great job of with her in general. I mean, it's really difficult for a mare to hold that top class form for consecutive seasons, and she was able to do it for more than a couple. So that was very special, and they don't come around very often, ones like her, that's for sure.
When your dad joined us on this program a while back, Riley, he was telling the story about not being able to get stalls at Centennial Park because his horses at that time weren't good enough and they wouldn't give him stalls. And then all of a sudden he's talking about training multiple champions. Of course, now Royal Delta being one of the more recent ones in recent years. But can you imagine that your dad at one point wouldn't be able to get stalls at a racetrack?
I mean, it's seeing where he is now, it's hard to imagine. But, you know, everyone starts out. Everyone gets stalls for the first time or can't get stalls or whatever. And, I mean, that just kind of goes to show you that, you know, he never took anything for granted and he worked very hard. I mean, his story is pretty cool, you know, where he came from and everything. And to make it to New York, he always told me, you know, if you want to make it, you have to win in New York. That's the, you know, pinnacle of racing in America. So, you know, he came from pretty humble beginnings, but, you know, everything he, you know, gained or earned was well earned. I mean, he's worked very hard, and I'm very proud of him.
I know your dream is to one day go out on your own. How long do you think it may be until we see Riley Mott listed in the program?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a dream of mine, has been for a long time, but I'm not in any rush to go out on my own. I mean, I'm very content with where I am and have a lot to learn. You know, I've always told myself, if you think you know it all, you have to recheck yourself. So, I mean, every day working with, you know, our assistants and grooms and everyone, there's always something to learn from somebody. So no matter who it is. So you really have to keep an open mind. And right now I'm happy with where I am. And Dad always tells me when you know the time is right or the right opportunity comes along, you'll know for sure. So I wouldn't want to do anything prematurely or anything like that. So, and, you know, working with him, it's been very nice, and it's been a really cool part of my life. So one day, hopefully, but right now I'm pretty content with where I am.
Is there any special role that you fill in his operation?
I'm an assistant trainer. You know, we have assistants at each of our strings, and I guess I'm the newest one. I got out of college a couple of years ago and started with my position as an assistant. So that's my current role.
Talking with Riley Mott, the son of Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. We're going to step away for a short commercial break. We'll be back to continue this visit right after this. Stay with us. This is Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton.
The Phasic Tipton November Sale. The world's premier breeding stock event annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. In 2015, broodmares averaged 3 times more than the nearest competitor, and racing and broodmare prospects averaged 5 times more, with weanlings selling for as high as $600,000. The Phasic Tipton November Sale, November 7th in Lexington, Kentucky. Nominate today at phasictipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Amaya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studios, continuing to visit with the son of trainer Bill Mott, that is Riley Mott, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. We're going to continue that visit in just a moment, right after we remind you that if you're looking for great purses, world-class amenities, and an extended racing season, there are only a few reasons, well, those are only a few of the reasons why you should run your horse at Woodbine Racetrack. Your success is absolutely due north. Having won notable awards and acknowledgments for being a role model within the industry, Woodbine offers a premier experience to all friends of the horse racing community. And Jude and I can tell you that firsthand. It is a remarkable racetrack, a remarkable facility, and they treat you like gold. They're located in Toronto, Canada, of course, a cosmopolitan city. Woodbine is committed to innovation and not only has a history of accomplishments, but continues to be aggressive in adopting new technology and solutions to drive the future of horse racing. They play host to over 130 live racing days in 2016 and 2017, with an average of, how about this, over $500,000 offered in purses daily, and the meet starts in spring, concludes in early December. You'll get access to world-class trainers, a modern backstretch, great training surfaces, and so much more. So why not share in the profit by racing your horse at Woodbine Racetrack? You can start your journey by visiting woodbineentertainment.com/due north. That's woodbineentertainment.com/due north to learn more. Riley, have you ever been to Woodbine with your dad or made a trip up that way?
I have, actually. I was just there this past weekend, and it was about my fifth or sixth time going in the past year. So, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with it at this point. And like you guys just reiterated, that's a top-class facility with top-class management. I mean, they treat you very well when you're visiting in from out of town. And, I mean, very nice, prestigious stakes that we point for with our horses. So, yeah, I only have good things to say about Woodbine.
Yeah, it's a magnificent place, and we went up for the Queen's Plate this year, had a great time, and everybody that we've sent up there seems to enjoy it, and I highly recommend it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Riley, you mentioned attending the University of Kentucky here in Lexington, and you mentioned how special that was because you were able to go to Keeneland and to the horse farms and be part of this industry firsthand. You also mentioned that you grew up playing hockey. Did you get a chance to play with the club team here at UK when you were there?
I did not. I hung up the skates after high school, which I do miss playing every day of my life, but I did not play at UK. I sort of just immersed myself in the horse industry once I got to Lexington. That was enough for me at that point.
You know, as I was getting ready for this program, I read a great story that our good friend Sean Clancy published on thisishorseracing.com. It was in July of last year. It was part of his Cup of Coffee series that he writes each and every week. And he wrote about a horse that eventually became known as Sight Read, which is a horse that you picked out alongside your good friend Phil Hager here at the sales at Keeneland. And you did that for $32,000. Tell me the story of Sight Read. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I was in school at the time, and you know, the September sale came around, and Phil Hager, he's a very, very good friend of mine. We were fraternity brothers at UK, and he's now, you know, working in the bloodstock industry, and he's came and worked for us, you know, one summer a few years back, just to kind of get familiar with, you know, our stable and everything, and just to see what it was all about. And you know, once he left, he started doing a lot of bloodstock work for my dad, you know, going around the sales, you know, looking for certain horses for certain people. But yeah, we were at the September sale, and we were just poking around, and I was following him around, because that's not my strong point, really, is the sales. I mean, I'm not as familiar with it as the racing side, obviously. So I was following him around, and he was, you know, teaching me and showing me how to really look at a horse, and came across this horse by, you know, Tis Deja Vu, that was pretty nice. I forget which book it was. It might have been like book 4 or 5. And yeah, we liked him as an individual and everything like that, and called up my dad and, you know, presented the hip number to him, and he wasn't there. He was back in New York, I believe. And he said, you know, if you like him, then go to this certain price, and I'll get him if we can get him for cheap, you know, or cheap enough price. And we did. $32,000 was what he went for, and we got him. And the rest is history, really. But it was cool to have him sort of trust our judgment on it, you know, being that he wasn't even there. And I guess to set the story straight, I didn't really find the horse. I was with Phil, and I just happened to give the okay on it myself. So he really does get all the credit on it. And, you know, Phil, he's, you know, an up-and-coming star in the industry, I believe, and he's got a great eye for a horse and an equally as good person. So that was really fun to be a part of, and hopefully it happens again. But you can't expect stuff like that to happen, you know, every time you buy a horse, you know.
Well, and if I recall correctly, it was your mom, Tina, who selected the name for that horse. Where did the name Sight Read come from?
Honestly, I can't tell you exactly what it means, but I think it has something to do with, like, reading music or something like that. My mom's into piano, so I think it had something to do with that. But she was, you know, all happy since she named it and it won and everything. So, yeah, that was cool for her. And, you know, when the horse won, that was one of the most special times I've had in horse racing. I mean, you know, to win for, I think it was opening weekend at Saratoga, and, you know, everyone comes with their best shot, you know, with their two-year-old and everything like that. So for him to win as impressively as he did with a horse that was owned by my family, it was really neat. It almost felt like winning a grade one, like, honestly, to me. That's how I felt anyway. So it was a very nice moment.
Well, anytime you win a race at Saratoga, it's like winning a grade one. It is so hard to win a race there, and everybody wants to do it, but not everybody does. So that really is cool.
Yeah.
It had to be special knowing that your dad had the faith in you to say, okay, hey, if you like the horse, here's the amount of money I'm willing to spend. We'll take a shot and we'll do it. Just based on your recommendation and on Phil's recommendation, that had to be special.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, thankfully it worked out really well. So it might've made me look a little better than I really am. that was good. But I think, yeah, that was nice. That was, you know, he's a special horse. We still have him in the barn. And yeah, he's doing well right now.
When he won that race last year, it was July, obviously, of 2015. And he raced in your dad's colors, which are the green with the white diamonds. Was it true that your dad actually had to order new silks because it had been so long since he raced one in his name?
That's exactly right. They're a fresh pair of silks, which I'm not sure if that helped in the win or not, but they were looking good in the winner's circle. And yeah, he honestly couldn't remember the last horse that he owned. So yeah, that was cool. And that just added to, you know, the special feelings that we had about it.
Do you like training the young horses, or do you prefer the older ones or the grass horses? What's your favorite type of horse?
I mean, I'm not really sure if I have a preference. I think, you know, at the beginning of the summer, you know, May, June, July, when you get the new crop in, it's very exciting. I have a lot of fun, you know, looking up the pedigrees and the siblings and all that stuff, and, you know, kind of having the dream in the back of your mind if they'll, like, turn out or not. But, it's really fun. It's cool to see the process of them progressing through their training and everything like that. You know, we work really hard at that time of year to kind of work the two-year-olds into our program and get them acclimated and everything. So when they, you know, do turn the corner and start, you know, getting the whole deal and they start running, and if they run well, it's pretty gratifying because, you know, all the hours and hard work and time that you put into it. But, yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, a number of very nice turf and dirt horses through the years and, you know, fillies, mares, colts, all that. So, yeah, like I said, I don't really have a preference, but I think just training horses in general is a pretty awesome time for me.
Talking with Riley Mott here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Riley, you mentioned getting the young horses into your program, and that's a term that we hear used by an awful lot of trainers that come on this very show. What is that Bill Mott program for a young horse?
I mean, obviously, you don't want to force or push anything. You know, you want to go at the horse's pace. Sometimes, you know, you have to encourage them to, you know, try to catch up a little more on certain things. But just kind of I mean, it sounds cliche, but letting the horse tell you what it's ready to do and what it's not ready to do. If a horse needs time, you give it time. If a horse is showing precocity, then, you know, you kind of just keep training on. And, yeah, it's really all about the horse and, you know, getting them into our feed program and all that. So, you know, everyone has their own ways, and we have ours. And, yeah, it's fun to see it all work out in the end, hopefully.
What's the greatest training job you've ever seen your dad do with a singular horse?
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is maybe Ron the Greek. He was always a nice horse. He had a few trainers before us, before we got him. I believe he won the LeComp down in Fairgrounds as a three-year-old. So he always showed that he was a nice horse. And we got him, later in his career. He was a private purchase. And, he had a few chronic issues and things that, you know, he had to be stopped on for and all that. But, you know, he always looked and trained like he was a nice horse. And, we took our time with him and gave him, you know, the certain amount of care that he needed. And it turned into him winning three of the most prestigious races in America. He won the Santa Anita Handicap, Stephen Foster, and then the Jockey Club Gold Cup. So it was a horse, you know, he came into our barn. I remember the day he came in, and, you know, I was familiar with him, but never did I imagine he would go on to win those races. So that was very cool and great job by our team, really, to just, give him the time that he needed and get him to where he ended up going. So that was a pretty good training job, not just by my dad, but, you know, everyone involved with the horse.
He was a big old beast of a horse, and that probably contributed to the fact that he had so many issues because he was big and strong and heavy.
Yeah, he was always, you know, he had a lot of substance to him. And, one of the classiest horses I've been around, just demeanor-wise. You could stand him out on the track, and he would just stand there like a statue and look for, you know, as long as he let him, really. So, like I said, a lot of class, and definitely had the ability to back it up.
You bring up the fact that, you know, it wasn't just a great training job by your dad, but everybody involved with the horse, and that's so commonplace in the world of thoroughbred racing. It's not just the trainer. Now, the head trainer will get all the glory because it's their name in the program. They're the one out there in front of the public. But it takes a whole bunch of people to get these horses to the races and to get them to win races. Tell me about the Mott team. Who else is involved?
I mean, well, first of all, we have our assistant trainers who have been with my dad for years, some of them 20 years, 15 years. Leanna Wilford at Belmont. Kenny McCarthy, he goes to Gulfstream and Churchill Downs, Rodolph Brissett, and Neil Posnanski. I mean, they're really, the heart and soul of the team. They've been with my dad for many years, and I think, you know, honestly, if they went out on their own, they'd be very good trainers in their own right. So, not only them, but, you know, the blacksmith, the veterinarians who I've grown up with learning different things from, riders, grooms. We have grooms and foremen who have been with us since before I was born, who are still with us today. So, I mean, it's a world of knowledge, and it truly is a team effort. You know, if you take one piece of the puzzle out, it throws things off totally. So it's really a well-oiled machine, to be honest.
Riley, the day your dad was inducted into the Hall of Fame, that was back in 1998. You were obviously still very, very young. Do you remember much about that day?
Not a whole lot. I remember going to the, you know, museum and getting dressed up for the ceremony and everything. And we had a big tent party at our house afterwards to celebrate. But I really don't have a whole lot of memories from that day. I didn't understand the magnitude of what it was that he was getting inducted into. It's such a select group and such an honor. I mean, the names that are of the horses, trainers, jockeys who are in that group are just, I mean, the ultimate. So that's now I can really, really appreciate that, and it makes me extremely proud of them.
Tell me about going into the Hall of Fame and looking at your dad's plaque and seeing his name, his accolades listed there in the hall.
I mean, it gives me chills, to be honest. I mean, like I said before, the names that he's in that elite group with, it's very makes me very proud of him. And the cool thing about it, I mean, he never got a big head about it or anything. I mean, he's very flattered by it, but you know, the next day it's back to work. So you know, it was a cool honor for my dad and the family, but you know there's a lot of big names to go in there as well.
I believe he was the youngest guy to ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame, at least as a trainer. He's going to need another plaque because the way he continues to win races, that plaque's going to be a little outdated, huh?
Well, yeah, that's another part of it. He was the youngest guy, and I don't know like what age some of the other trainers started him, but he had quite a few years under his belt, so that might have added to it a little bit. But yeah, like you said, we've been lucky enough to have some success since then, and it's really a tribute to a lot of the loyal owners that we have that have been with my dad for years. And you know, it wouldn't be possible without the horses, so you really have to take that into account. So,
well, there have been so many memorable moments at Saratoga. Of course, the Hall of Fame induction in 1998, but then this year, your dad was honored with a special red jacket in what they call the red jacket ceremony at Saratoga. And that was another moment that had to be special for you, your dad, and the entire family.
Yeah, it was. You know, Cott Campbell was inducted on the same day, and he's obviously a legend of the turf as well. And, you know, Angel Cordero was there, Tom Durkin, Wayne Lucas. So, you know, it's sort of like the Hall of Fame. It's just it's flattering and an honor to, you know, even be mentioned in the same breath as those guys. So I was, you know, happy for Dad, and it was a very, very nice tribute that Saratoga put on.
Riley, you've touched on some of the horses, and I think I asked you earlier about maybe your favorite horse. You mentioned the name Karina Mia, who is currently running, of course, a winner of the Acorn Stakes. She is so, so good. How about some of the other horses that when you think back over the years that, for whatever reason, are always going to stand out to you?
I mentioned Ron the Greek. He was pretty cool to, you know, just to be around. Royal Delta, obviously. We had a very nice mare named Close Hatches a few years ago for Judmont. And that was pretty special, being that she was a champion Eclipse Award winner for Judmont. I mean, to do it for an operation like that was extremely special. They're arguably the best, you know, breeding operation in the history of racing. So that meant a lot to us. And I guess Cigar, I was a little young to remember him. That was in, you know, 95, 96. So I didn't have much memory of back then, but I was able to visit him quite often in Lexington at the horse park. And that was very cool. I would go out there every season and check up on him, see how he was doing. And, you know, just to think of, you know, all the lives that he touched in one way or the other. That was pretty cool. So even though he wasn't, you know, racing at the time, just sort of being able to spend time with Cigar was special for me.
So for me, being a huge fan of Holy Bull, when I make the statement on this program that you never would have heard of Cigar had Holy Bull stayed healthy, sounds like you might disagree with me.
Well, I don't know about that. It's obviously very unfortunate what happened to Holy Bull in the Don that day. But, you know, he obviously had a very good stud career afterwards. So, he lived a nice life after his racing career. And, yeah, I mean, people say it was sort of like, you know, passing the torch off, which is, you know, fun to think about. But it's unfortunate that that had to happen to Holy Bull in that race. But, yeah, two great horses that had a huge following.
Yeah, in all seriousness, they were both great horses. And I think the biggest disappointment for myself and for the racing world is that we never got to see what that rivalry might have been.
Yeah, you never know. You kind of fantasize over it, and sort of like, you know, the Zenyatta-Rachel comparisons, and they always wanted to get a match race together, and never happened, but it's cool to think about. But it's fun that, you know, people can appreciate the talents of both horses. So that's, you know, it's unfortunate that they never got to run against each other, you know, the full entire race. But, he was a special one, Holy Bull.
Cigar was one of those horses, I think, that really helped turn racing around. Racing was in a little bit of a funk for a while, and when he came along, he put racing back on the map, became a nationwide hero and somebody that everybody talked about at the water cooler, at the ballpark, wherever they were. When Cigar was running, people were talking about him. Do you remember any of that?
Like I said before, I was pretty young, so I honestly have no memory of Cigar when he was racing. Unfortunately, if he was running now, and you know, the fact that I'm like really interested in it, that would be pretty cool. But I mean, not only was he on a massive win streak, he went all over the country, showing his talents. He went to, you know, Oakland, California, you know, New York, Florida. I mean, he sort of touched every point of the country, and people came out and saw him, and he was, like you said, very good for racing. And it's you know, I know people complained, you know, a few years ago, we need, you know, some stars in the sport to get people interested, and I really think, you know, with Zenyatta, Rachel, American Pharoah, Songbird, Teppan, I mean, we're in almost another golden era of horse racing, it seems like, to me at least. There's a lot of horses that pull in outside interest.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I would imagine from your perspective, Riley, as somebody who is aspiring to eventually go out on their own and train horses on their own, being around all of those great horses and great champions that you've had the privilege to be around over the years has to be an advantage when you go out on your own, doesn't it?
I mean, I don't know about an advantage. I try to take away how you manage a horse of that magnitude. I mean, you obviously want to treat them all the same and everything. But, you know, when you're sort of, you know, when you have a horse that's, you know, of large stature and you're sort of under the microscope, it's nice to be able to kind of, from my standpoint, just see how everything works. I mean, my dad, he always told me, you know, never let the media or anyone else train your horse for you. So, you know, you have to stick to your beliefs and your routine, and just ultimately do what's right for the horse, and don't do anything just because other people think differently or anything like that. So, it's been, you know, an interesting learning experience being around all these nice horses that I've had over the years.
If you could claim any horse, any one of the champion horses, who would it be?
I don't know. I mean, my dad, he is in love with a horse he had named Theatrical. He was a horse that came over from Europe for the Firestones, and he sort of jump-started my dad's career. I never really got to be around him, obviously, because I was in the 80s. I'm a 91 model. But, he was, you know, a huge talent. I mean, one of my favorite things, you know, watching replays, I always watch Theatrical's Breeders' Cup against Trampolino, who was the ARC winner coming into the Breeders'. I always, you know, loved just watching that and marveling at how nice of a horse he was. And he obviously turned around and had just as good, or if not better, of a stallion career. So he holds an extremely special spot in my dad's heart. So I always really wished I had been around a horse like that.
Riley, believe it or not, less than a minute left here in the program before we have to wrap things up and let you go. But I always like to end by asking trainers what other interests that they might have and tell us something that people might not know about them. So if you weren't training horses, what else would Riley Mott be doing?
That's a good question. Honestly, for a career, I never thought of doing anything else. Like, I mean, it's always been horse racing, and that's always what I've wanted to do. You know, I have my hobbies and stuff, you know, going to UK. I've gotten really into the, you know, college basketball, follow that quite a bit. But, you know, as far as a career goes, there's never really been anything else. It's been horse racing, so I'm not sure if I really have a good answer for you.
Riley, I can't tell you how much we've enjoyed this visit here. You've mentioned several times how proud you are of your dad. Well, I can tell you he should be extremely proud of you as well, and no doubt great things ahead for Riley Mott and for your dad and the entire team and the entire family. Thank you for being here, my friend. All the best moving forward.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, Riley Mott here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Great kid.
Yeah, fantastic.
The Mott legacy is in wonderful hands with Riley.
No question.
For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We're going to talk to you next time on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. Until next Wednesday, we'll talk to you then.